Welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Peter.
We're at Morro Lake in upstate New York, in the town of Morro, on the Lake of Morro. And we're lakeside for a lakeside chat.
Hi.
We have some dogs nearby, and we have Micah nearby, so if the other dogs get excited about something, we might get a very loud bark.
We have been in the middle of a complex dog conversation from one side of the lake to the other. We just don't know what they're saying.
Nothing good, I'm sure.
Isn't that always the way?
I think there's hot dogs over here, guys. So anywho, here we are in the quiet of nature.
Oh yeah, I spaced out for a minute there. So quiet of nature is sort of loud.
Always.
Yeah.
I have always found that, and it's one of the things about pratyahara that I find so interesting, because many people think, oh, I can't focus because there's so many sounds, and there's always this in the room, and then you go, if only I lived out in nature. But every time I've tried to meditate in nature, it's much more distracting than just being in
Not to mention room. The mosquitoes.
Yeah. Well, many, yeah. It's the sense of touch, getting bitten by mosquitoes, sounds, things crackling.
All the senses.
I remember once I was trying to meditate out at the Shvetsov's farm, and closed my eyes. Suddenly I had this sense of being watched, or some weird feeling about somebody or something. I opened my eyes and a horse was about 2 yards away from me staring at me. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to learn
it's
how to...
It's a good thing it wasn't a bear.
Yeah. You have to learn how to turn the mind in.
Yeah.
The outside is not going to fix it for you.
No.
But
we do have a lot of imaginations about that, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
In our modern world.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of imaginations about how if certain circumstances were different, then things will be better.
Then I would be different.
And it applies to meditation practice, yoga practice, as much as to everything else.
You know,
like we think, well, I can't meditate because. But the only thing that's preventing anyone from doing the practice is doing the practice.
Yes. The only thing preventing someone from doing the practice is what
not
did you say?
Doing the practice.
Is not doing the practice. The only thing making it possible for you to be different is to be different.
Yeah.
By doing the practice. Yeah. By turning it around.
And then you don't have to judge your practice. That's the other part, right? It's like to have doing the practice without attachment to a particular result, which totally takes the responsibility for the outcome out of your hands.
Well, I think that's the part that people have such trouble with conceptually. I'm not sure we have as much trouble with it in practice, because the moment of the effort of the practice, right? First you have to identify the issue, the challenge, and then you sit down and you do a practice around the challenge. And then the outcome doesn't happen right then. The outcome happens later. And so by the time the outcome comes, sometimes I think we go, oh, great, you know.
Yeah,
or,
we forget
oh, shit,
that we've
you know?
Been doing this
exactly.
thing to help with that.
Exactly. And so we're just not used to sort of isolating it and thinking, okay, so here's what I can do and this is what I'm doing now in this moment, because that's yoga. And then when the outcome comes, sort of saying, okay, this is what's happening now. And to eventually sort of make those connections so that we start to understand how that works. But before I go off on this, I had the thought that I talk a lot about, like, in Tantra or Hermetics or, you know, whatever you want to call it, we talk a lot about as above, so below. Mm-hmm. And lately I have just been focusing very much on the corollary, which is as within, so without. And I think that's related a lot to the idea of focusing on a thing as a practice and not being attached to the result, because that keeps the active place on the as within. Mm-hmm. And the as without shows up out there. Mm-hmm. And there's always a connection, but it's not the connection that you necessarily think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a really useful, it's definitely conceptual. Like, we have to understand it in the mind, and it's harder to sort of get it in walking around our lives, but it's really important to me to kind of try and delineate that for myself and for other people too.
There's a great story in Vasishtha's yoga that I was reading this pandemic time, where a man is a king, but he decides to go off and become a hermit. He goes off to be a hermit, and he's doing this thing, and his wife's hoping he's going to come back to her sometime, and so she goes off to see him, and he's having this living his life as a hermit, and she's teaching him, but she comes to him and he thinks she's not his wife. He thinks she's someone else. And then he goes off on a life that takes like 1,000 years. And it's all in his mind. It's like a dream of this other life that he has. And at the end of that, he has some understanding that lets him recognize something about this person who's been with him, who he doesn't think is his wife. But then he realizes it's his wife, and on and on and on. It's just all, like you say, all as within. It's all this stuff within. But that's obviously an extraordinarily elaborate story. But not unlike when we go to sleep at night and we have a dream and we're in a total circumstance and we're completely engrossed in it as though it's reality. And then we wake up and we're like, whoa, wait, what? You know, yeah. We are constantly manifesting things. And the place we can address them is the outside, but we as a culture are so focused on the outside thing is what's doing everything to us.
Exactly. And it's so widespread that it's bare.
It's okay. It's okay. It's
Micah okay. agrees.
Leave it. Micah, stop.
Micah's very focused on what's out there.
Yes. That dog does not care what you're doing, and don't try to get it to.
I think that kind of says it. It shows what's happening a lot, especially right now, because there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of people thinking a lot of things are happening to them, and they don't like what's happening to them, and they don't have a way of focusing on what is happening inside themselves. And in fact, you know, dogs are very good at that, at seeing what's happening out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not that we should not look to what's coming up out there. But there's this whole other side that we're not used to looking at, and I think that's really important. I'm trying to think of... You know, there's for me a way in which when I'm paying attention to what... When I'm doing my sadhana, right, and... For me, sadhana means staying very close to a place that I would connect with svadhyaya, or, you know, really paying attention to the ebb and flow of my mood and my physical health and my energetic, I don't know what to call it, stability. And when I'm in that place, I am much more able to understand what's my participation in what's happening out there, and to kind of like keep myself in a place of listening and then taking actions. And then I can also feel where I start to get charged up by a thing, whether positively or negatively. And so then the as within and the so without, the what's coming up out there in the world, it's just everyday experiences, people who show up, you know, dog conversations, road noise, physical challenges for me. Then I can sort of keep myself in my sadhana. And it has to adjust and change depending on the circumstances. But, you know, I'm not sure where the conversation, where that thought is going, but it feels like a very important thing for people who have a sadhana to understand, because sadhana is not just about making the outside circumstances better for yourself. Sadhana is about being able to have some freedom in relating to your outside circumstances.
Yeah, I think for, you know, throughout all of the various practices of yoga, there's always description of layers, like different levels of a practice. So you have David Frawley was talking about this in something I was reading this morning. There's like, you're doing practice on the level of your like physical survival. You know, you're trying to do something so that you can be able to have the stuff you need, you know? And then there's a level of doing it so that you can get the things you want, like the desire on the sort of physical plane, like the pleasure plane. And you can also have an effect that is one of moksha, something that is like liberating you from the confusion that you face in life about who am I and what is the purpose of living and all of that kind of stuff. And any practice could be for any of those things. So many people come to yoga class first because they're looking for something like weight loss, or they're looking to heal something that's, you know, physically wrong with them. And then they start to, you know, get involved in the stuff of it, and then it becomes sort of like aesthetic pleasure. And so they're enjoying the aromatherapy and the this and the that, and it's just really a great way to spend a Saturday afternoon. And then they get hooked a little deeper, and it becomes more about like, well, wait a minute, what are you saying? What was that thing you were saying? Is that when I have this issue or whatever? And so it becomes a cultivating that takes place. It's like evolution or like growing up. And none of those ways is right or wrong. They're just like different applications.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody, you know, we see that with ourselves too, you know, that, you know, when something comes up that's a real, say, you know, life-threatening challenge, or, you know, just physical security challenge, we, you know, if we're practitioners, we usually go all hands on deck to do something around that to, like, stabilize or whatever. You know, like the way, and you know, throughout all those levels, you know, if there's something that's psychically happening that we're not, you know, there's lots of things that bring us to the, you know, the place of wanting to uncover the deeper essences, I would say, or just, but the way that I think about it sometimes is that we're looking, when we look at our physical experience or our emotional experience or our, you know, energetic or spiritual experience, we are really looking, it's always like a it's like a pattern, you know, in Tantra there's that thing of weaving, the metaphor of weaving. Well, like, it's all these interwoven elements of experience that, you know, what experience is made up of. And we're seeing our own, you know, when we look at our own experience from the perspective of the Jiva Atman, or the consciousness, the part of consciousness that's here engaging with that experience, then through that, we're able to see beyond it, right? It's not about just disengaging to go somewhere beyond. That's not going to probably be what happens, but rather being in it, getting conscious within it, and then, right, finding out, oh, I'm not that experience. I'm this consciousness having this experience. And it's really easy to have that thought, and harder to be in the experience, moving through it to come out beyond it. And so, you know, all of these ways in, to me, you know, a lot of times it gets described as like a ladder. I don't really feel like it's a ladder. I feel like it's, what's your experience? You know, what's the experience you're having, and what's the practice you're doing around that? Because doing a practice around some imagined experience or somebody else's experience doesn't make sense to me. So, interesting, just got quiet.
Well, I was thinking about the quiet, like there's an element of vacation that's happening right now. I mean, we're sitting in a park on a lake, in the midst of, you know, a pandemic, and there's like a breather, and it lets you have different relationship, or a different perspective at least, on the what you're experiencing, you know, the predominant stuff. And I think more and more, I think more and more about the particular circumstances as being almost arbitrary. They are karmic, meaning they have come about already because of some things previously. Parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, you know, political movements and so forth. All of the stuff of the past brings about this moment. And so to argue too much about the moment is like beating your head against that tree over there. It's like that tree is not going anywhere, no matter how much I bang my head on it. And so instead, I can simply be with this tree, you know, with this bench, who looks like it's seen better days, but it's quite beautiful in its elderliness.
Yeah. There's moss growing in between the boards of the table.
Yeah, and the screws that held it together are all about an eighth of an inch up.
Yeah.
That's 2 centimeters on the metric system. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, it's just, if you can then relate to what's going on in any moment, whatever it is, then you're going to have, of course, your reactions to it.
Yeah.
And your reactions to it, depending on how skillful you are at finding sattva guna, are either going to, you know, run a course quickly, or they're going to run a course over
the whole time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole time could be spent being annoyed about something.
Yeah. And I was also going to say that the experience, that that sort of, there is a collective thing happening, which is that there are many, many things ending.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's funny, the metaphor of this table is like really apropos for me, because, you know, there is a beauty in it, and it's showing its age. And, you know, you could salvage the screws and use them for something else, maybe, or I don't know. But there are many things in our world that are actually just needing to be let go of and let them go back to compost, kind of. And there's a lot of process around that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of holding on, and there's a lot of, you know, trying to protect and amass and, you know, push away. And, you know, there's some people getting very, very fiery about it, and others being very, you know, fearful.
Right.
And I think it's a particular, I also think that there, you know, from what I'm seeing in myself and people, that it's also a very good time to just sit down and do your practice and really look at what's been hard for you and notice what's shifting, and just kind of let that, let whatever's ending be ending, and let whatever's coming in be really new.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, that's always what's going on. It's just so in our face right now. You know, think of how many students that you've had that, you know, they're just chugging along doing their thing, and then suddenly something goes on, some personal circumstance changes in some dramatic way that throws their life upside down, and then they deal with that. We're in this place right now where the entire world is having that same experience at the same time, but it's no different from what's always life. You know, life is always a series of dramatic occurrences, and how we deal with them is the stuff of living.
Yeah.
You know? And when we, I don't know, like I'm so enamored of the drama metaphor, you know, the play on the stage metaphor of, you know, actors performing a role can totally love performing that role. I mean, even whatever that role is, right? And they have this sense that this role is what I'm doing right now. And they also know they're not just that role, right? And so they go through the play 100% committed to it. And before the play, they were something else. And after the play, they were something else.
Well, if we're looking at that metaphor, I have a feeling that, like, we're in a play that we've been in for a very, very long run. And it was popular at one time. And it's sort of like it's run its course. And everybody's going through their roles in an automatic way. And the funding is dried up, and that long run of that play is over. It's not happening again tomorrow night. And people are having to look around and say, "Oh, I'm not that actor. I'm the actor, not the character."
Right.
And they're having when that happens, like on Broadway, all the actors get freaked out. You know, the play's ending, or maybe they're glad it's over, but I think that's where we're at, and we've all been in this gigantic play together, you know.
Right.
And you know, there's definitely going to be a new play. It hasn't been written yet.
Right.
And
it's not a. I mean, it's what's so fascinating about this time is there. It's kind of like a marker, because always the phases of creating, sustaining, destruction are cycling through.
Right, that's true.
But this feels like to stick with the metaphor, like the major curtain dropping. In fact, on Broadway, you can't have a play now.
So, yeah.
So,
but it is true. But see, the thing is, there are cycles within cycles, and
right.
You know, once you start sort of really recognizing that this is a, you know, things in the world that we live in, they are cyclical. You know, the moon revolves around the earth, and the earth revolves around the sun, and, you know, they don't go to a different type of revolution altogether. They just revolve, and each cycle is different. Then there's also this, it's a little bit like your Vasistha's yoga story, where it's like, one cycle could be taking place within how many other
right
larger or smaller cycles. And so, if you don't come to the end of a cycle, you don't know where you are in that scheme. And sometimes in the pause between the ending and the beginning, right? We always know about the beginning and the end, but we don't really know about what happens between the end and the next beginning in a major cycle. And I think we've really gotten to see that. And it's hard to see it because we're so involved in our, our stuff.
Yeah, our fears about it, attachments and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it can be, and in many ways it is becoming a opportunity for a lot of new growth, new ideas, new perspective. And I think that it would be helpful, and maybe this is a place to end with whatever you have to say after this, that it's also a time to stop between the end and the new. There's no thing.
Exactly.
And that no thing is an opportunity to be whole, be oneness again, and to recognize this dual nature that we have, that we are doing, and there's also a part of us that is no need to be doing. It already is perfect and whole. And by making us stay at home for months, it's really given us a chance to let some of the speed wear off and to allow us to just be willing to do nothing.
Yeah. And I can really resonate with that. And I would only add that it's a good time. It really relates back to the idea of, we didn't name it before, but Abhyasa Vairagya, that if you can stay related to what's happening in the pause, it's a good time, and not get overly pulled out by all the fears or thoughts around things that you need to do or act upon. It's a really good time to sit and just imagine, what could it be? Like, we don't all always connect with that visionary place, but everybody has the capacity to.
Right.
And it is very hard sometimes to be in that visionary place. And I don't mean like it has to be like this major vision for the world, but like even just around your life or a piece of your life, and to just kind of let it come up for you. What could it be?
Right.
If you weren't tied to all the things that have gone before, and you could just imagine yourself in a place, and that's, I think, everybody has a different way of getting there. But it is an intuitive process. Even if you're a very technical person.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be a sadhana all on its own.
Yeah.
Of just being in the pause.
Yeah, and what could be is always coming from the what we want, what we desire, but it's very rarely very conscious.
Yeah.
So our unconscious is constantly driving what it is that we're putting out in front of us, which is dreaming is a perfect metaphor for that. Our unconscious then tells a whole story based on what's in the back of our mind, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that one of the beauties of making more of this stuff conscious, taking the pause, being quiet, listening, is that you can get a little more engaged in the wonder of what it is that we're doing. We're unbound everything, suddenly having these lives, mm-hmm. suddenly having these experiences.
Yeah.
And what experiences should we engage in?
Yeah, what's the curtain closing on, and what's going to be on the stage when the curtain opens again?
Yeah, there's a little chipmunk over here by the wood, and he's just been in the pause trying to figure out, should I go? Should I stay?
Are they
coming? Are they looking at me?
What are they doing, those humans?
And that's something else I've thought a lot about lately, because animals have been so much in the news that they're having more time. They get more mm-hmm. dibs on the space mm-hmm. because we've been inside. And so they're just going back to their cyclical living.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they'll move into the space that's available.
Yeah. And just do their life again.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks, Wendy, for having this lakeside chat with me.
Anytime.
And we'll check in again with everybody from up here in Saratoga Springs.
All right.
Namaste.
Namaste.
That's today's episode. Thanks a lot for listening to Peter's podcast. I hope that you find real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living through your practice. Please support me on Patreon. Rate the podcast. Namaste. Thank you.